from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krissa Hendricks again.
Again, with such a popular guest that she gets emails from people being like, when is she going to be on next and stuff.
Is that why I'm on? I think it's because you had no other choice.
We often find ourselves in those kinds of situations, my dear, as I was your helper this weekend.
That wasn't because I didn't have any other choice. It's because I wanted to save money and not have to hire an assistant.
That is kind of like not having choice. What? Yeah, perhaps if we lived in a place where money grew on trees,
then we'd have more choice.
We would have more choice.
Then it would have no value. If it grew on trees, it would have no value and we'd have a different form of currency.
Well, it would be a serious problem. There'd be a lot of inflation. In that nightmarish world where money is worthless. We're going to have an interesting show today, actually. We're going to have that show that I was promising on my whole ageism. And I'm going to identify for you exactly where that ageism lies. Because it's a very complicated and super fucking interesting answer to that question. I didn't even realize. I was doing the research today thinking, man, am I going to be able to transform this into a show? And then I realized I need to read several books. My mind is just blown. Holy shit.
So hopefully, your mind was blown.
My mind was blown.
This
can you believe
be a
that?
Good show.
Can you believe that? It was blown in the sense that I felt a new profound awakening as in what I see as a kind of like an overarching theme that I've been really obsessing about. You remember when I've been comparing humanity endlessly with ants and colonies and what have you?
Yes, yeah, I find that very annoyingly insulting. Continue.
Yeah, I think everybody finds it rather insulting. And that's just going to be more of that catharsis on the show. Before we begin, I think it's important to note that the other reason I'm including this show right now is because it has political consequences, right? I want people to understand, like, there's been this question going around, why is it that the presidential race between, Obama and Mitt Romney, why is it so close? This is people's genuine confusion. Why is it so fucking close? It shouldn't be so close. I know
why
the answer.
Why shouldn't it be so close?
Mitt Romney isn't really supposed to appeal to anyone in the traditional sense. As a candidate, he's just terrible. He doesn't fit the narrative that the right would like to portray. He has several issues. He has several problems. Mainly that he was kind of a moderate when he was a governor of Massachusetts, and that he was, for the longest time, pro-abortion. And a number of other things that typically just do not get you to be on a ticket. But hey, desperation, right?
Yeah, I mean, the lesser of four evils, wasn't it?
I suppose so. The reason I wanted to do the podcast first was because I listened to there was a fan who sent me a link to a show, and which I'll have in the notes. Her name is Professor Theda Skocpol.
It sounded so bad.
It's oh yeah, that's what Skocpol. I don't know. See what I mean? This is why normally I don't say anything. I tried to have her on the show, by the way. I sent her an email because I desperately wanted to talk to her, but she's not taking any speaking engagements, unfortunately, or I'm not good enough. Either
it's
one
probably
of the two.
You're not good enough.
I'm probably not good
That's
enough.
That's what nice ladies say. That's how we turn down people.
That's
oh,
nice.
I'm sorry, I'm not really dating right now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just got out of a relationship. It's really...
I'm not dating because you're around. That's what that is. So she had a lecture. She went to Oxford. And they recorded and turned it into a podcast. It's called The Tea Party and the Remaking of American Conservatism. And basically, her and a grad student wanted to find out what the hell is the Tea Party made of, and decided to go about it in a scholarly manner.
Ah, I like this.
Yes, already you should. So in their research, I'm not sure how many people they interviewed, but it was quite a bit. And through their research, they found out a couple of things that will surprise you. Number one, the average Tea Partier is slightly more intelligent than the average American. Slightly more. They are also slightly more affluent.
How are they determining intelligence in this survey? Because that always makes me a bit irkum, because it's like, is this...
Okay, we're not having that fucking conversation, okay? We're going to assume, and you know what, last time we had No, actually, the reason we're not bringing this up is because there was a fan of the show who sent me a lot of interesting articles about the way they've, you know, reclassification. I think that our objections are a little bit old to the reclassification of intelligence. I think that we need to re-educate ourselves about it. Opinions should not yet be formed about it. That's all I'm saying. It's not a closed book. It's certainly not a closed book. But we're just going to assume right now that at least it provides some insight as to it, some measurement rather than none. Okay, just fucking accept it, or I'm going to beat you later. That's what's going to happen. Okay, so
I'm
slightly higher.
To go.
Shut up now. Shut up right now. So slightly higher than average intelligence, and slightly higher than average income, and they tend to be in the age range of, well, it starts fluctuating. It begins somewhere around 55, but it tends to be much, much older. Hmm. And now these individuals tend to distrust the government very strongly. All right, they distrust this institution. Although when they were surveyed about certain things that they liked about it, they did enjoy things that were immediately beneficial to them, i.e. Medicare, but distrustful of other things that actually were for younger generations. So education, social programs, food stamps, they were against those things. But they were for Medicare essentially being grandfathered in. Now, if you've looked at the Republican strategy, by the way, the way that they've actually been able to court these voters is to say, well, we're going to keep Medicare for you guys. This is a specifically Tea Party idea in order to make that cutoff, because they enjoy the services of the institutions that they distrust so much.
Mm.
And I'm going to go into why that is, because I did more than just listen to this podcast. I became obsessive about reading on age issues after that. But at that point, I realized, okay, back to this whole idea that on certain shows, people are like, Jacob, I think you're an ageist. And I go around and be like, I blame this generation. Well, this is going to be a lot of that, and I'm going to explain to you which generations I blame, okay, for the current problem, but that this is a recurring cycle. This happens all the fucking time. And we shouldn't, you know, there are certain things that we can predict, but there are also other exciting future opportunities that we can't. So that's going to be the third part of the show, where we talk about the future of these ideas. So first of all, essentially what we have to talk about now is generational theory. It's this idea that depending on how you define a generation, which just fucking varies, there is a list in the notes of generations, but trust me, this is not an agreed upon list, depending on when you characterize these generations. But in generational theory, it's this idea that you can create, there's basically a distinct period of time where, depending on how where you live in historically, it'll have a strong influence on those individuals. It'll lead to certain kind of generational shifts. And they have a predictable pattern, apparently. Well, in this contested theory, like in all science. Yay, contested theories. But, we're going to talk about what the different phases of civilizations apparently go through. And this has been tracked apparently since about the 15th century. Well, there basically are these different stages, four different stages, that a civilization basically goes through, okay? The first stage is something called the high. I guess you could look at it when a time where there's a strong institution, there's very little individualism, but this is kind of like nation-building time, right? Mm-hmm. A period where they build pyramids. This is sometimes also called a golden age, if you want. And what happens over time is that things tend to get pretty good, and the children of the individuals that grow up in this time tend to be a little bit spoiled, and they begin to have a bit of a distrust of the institution that they are taking advantage of, just mostly because they don't know life without that institution, right? They haven't grown up being in a crisis, which we'll get to. So the children of this period tend to have parents who are overly coddled them, if you want. Now, after that generation of overly coddled individuals that have started to question these institutions. But they did so because they wanted to focus on the individual, right? They were exhausted from this strong civic responsibility that they had. And the people that grew up in that time are generally very artistic, right? So, you know, you have strong cultural growth in that time, but institutional weakness. Now, in the midst of all that institutional weakness, the children of these individuals tend to like their grandparents, because generally you tend to associate with the generation that is once removed from your parents. You tend to view their world as new, where before it was old, and view the exceedingly long period of time which your parents' generation have power as a kind of malaise of totally wanting to reject their power and control, hence strong counterculture movements. Right, so you have this strong tendency, but the children that you produce tend to have themselves the same mentality now of the individuals before them. And this generation, there's an even stronger now distrust for institutions, so much so that you can look at, say, the 1980s, the Reagan era, where it's like, government is the problem, fucking bring it all down. And this is called unraveling. This is when the strong system that you had during the golden period basically gets shook to its foundation. And during that unraveling period, once that follows, it's the crisis period. This is when there are complete collapses. And the unraveling that we experience, say, during the recessions of the, you know, 80s, leading to the economic crisis that we've faced, say, in 2000s or 2008, with our version of the Great Depression. Similar to kind of, again, sort of like skipping certain generational trends, like you can see, you're like, oh my goodness, this is kind of a perpetual cycle here. Okay. Now, here's those are the four stages. And what's interesting about the stages is that apparently they lead to different kinds of individuals that exist within those stages. So it's, you kind of make a correlation. So we're going to talk about now the individuals that make up the archetypes, if you want. So the first one is a prophet. So they are born right after a crisis, when there's a new revival. So they have a strong sense of community life. In a sense, you could almost say, like, I think the reason it's called prophet, you could almost probably say there's a religious element to it, you know, again, of that community, and very good at rallying individuals, forming that society and saying no to individualism again.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, there's so many correlations between politics and religion and the way that we deal with them. I mean, think about when you go to a fancy dinner party, what are the two things you're not supposed to talk about? It's because people are irrationally sensitive about those two subjects.
Right, right. And so here you have essentially these guys who build the community that essentially becomes the new golden age, right? The sense of saying, like, all right, we're going to go back to this idea that we are together, united, and we will build shit. Now, this leads to now this other group, this other archetype, the nomads. And the nomads tend to be, again, like the individuals that are more responsible for artistic development. They've grown in a period of post-prosperity. Not that there's a decline yet. They're still experiencing all that wealth. They're like the 1950s, if you want. Just generally, you know, if you were white and middle class, you were benefiting from all of this fortune that had already been generated by the nation builders that had rebuilt the world. And, you know, you're kind of riding on that wave. And the wave that came after them is sort of like this spiritual, like we said, nomadic kind of element. Now what you get after these types of nomads are the heroes. They're the leaders. They sort of like these weaklings that go around and be like, we're culturally powerful, get eaten up by these heroes that are more militaristic and more organized, very strong politically. They have just so much political might, in fact, that it makes the next generation, the artistic generation, like the quiet generation.
I wonder where these names came from.
Well, they come from, actually, I did some research about where they come from. The quiet generation basically comes from the period of the children that were born during the Depression, during the time of crisis. Because what happens during the time of crisis is that actually the population dwindles. Birth rates go down. So the silent generation is called silent because they don't have any political power. Mm. And the generation before them, the hero ones, are strong politically as well. So it's like double impotence. Mm. That's why they're called the quiet generation. Now, the Quiet Generation is actually the right now they sort of fit in the older 65 years and older are the Quiet Generation, or sometimes I think it's also referred to as the Silent Generation.
It's impossible to follow.
It is like I am struggling and I'm using all my attention, and I can't. I'm like I don't know what comes before what. I don't care.
Okay. Let's go back. Let's look at our graph then. All right, because I already covered the four. Because I want to know where we basically fit in, our own sort of generation, right? So you're looking at me like you know you can't go on. I'm too confused. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to explain the fact? This is so complicated. I know. I'm just trying to reach people because at the end of this, I can explain why voting is the way that it is currently. All right. I want to talk specifically about two groups, the baby boomers and the Generation X, okay? The baby boomers are like your grandparents or like my grandparents. They're the ones who were young adults during the Vietnam War. So this group, that generation of baby boomers were kind of rebellious against the system. They created the general distrust of the institution that later led to the Reagan era, right? So they had good reasons to be distrustful of the institution, but in a sense they didn't realize that they would cause this generational shift, the Gen Xers, the Reagan people, who decided to dismantle everything and give us the current period that we're living in, the period of fucking crisis. That's who I don't like, the Gen Xers. That's my problem, the Gen Xers and the silent group, the 65 and older, because this group, the ones that are very conservative but want to have everything, are politically aligned with the Gen Xers, who are still very, very numerous. There's a lot of these people. There's 30 million of them, and they have a high voting rate. They have 41% compared to, say, our generation or even younger, that goes for as low as 17 or 24%. It accounts for nothing. Barely anything. Now, the baby boomers are pretty numerous, actually. They help to balance things out. They tend to be more left-leaning. Because, again, this was the generation that was like, not, you know, make peace, not war, man. And that generation, you can understand, they vote typically much more left, like Jimmy Carter, right? But because, you know, population bubbles are, we're at an unusual part where the 65 and older and the Gen Xers, which are generally 35 to 47 or something like that. Anyways, it's difficult to count. But within that, the Gen Xers, they're disproportionately large as a voting group, and they vote in really high numbers. So it doesn't matter even if there were more people that were actually on the side of progressiveness, the voting just isn't there. And that's why the races are so close. And that's why even you could predict what generations are going to have in terms of political leaning. And this is why the Republican Party is like, in one generation, we're going to be decimated. Because what's going to happen is that the Gen Xers are going to be old, and the silent are going to be gone, just gone. And they were a huge voting chunk, 22 million or more, just gone. And then you have maybe the younger generation, like the 18 to 20-something, that might also have that kind of, again, more conservative, what we call now libertarian bent. Unfortunately, they're nothing. They account for 2 million votes. They're pathetic. They would be decimated by a wave of left. And that's why sort of like the wave of right has been stemmed by the population bubble. But I think you could actually predict the election if all you had to do was identify the exact voting numbers, which I've been having problems doing. The actual statistics of specific generational numbers, hard to come by, because sometimes they divide a 65 and older, and then they put the 18s to 30, you know, 34s within one group, and I'm like, they're not one group. And then you know, there's several groups here, and you have to understand, and sometimes it's not even age. It is mentality. The way that I view generational differences is not so much age, although that is a factor, but kind of cultural ages.
Well, that makes sense, because, I mean, you hang out with people of different age groups, and you tend to have similar feelings to the people you hang out with.
Well, you know, you're heavily influenced by, like, say something as arbitrary as the TV that you're watching, right? The culture that you were absorbing during specific times are going to have a... They're going to shape you. it's a terrifying thought, I know, to imagine that your individual input into society is so meaningless that it can all be measured according to generational dynamics. But that is the truth. That is the fucking truth.
Yeah, but as a content producer, that's very exciting because basically it tells you how much influence that kind of thing has over people.
It's well, you know, it also means something interesting because I don't think that the whole hierarchy of archetypes too, I think is where the theory breaks down generally, because I don't agree with some of the conclusions. But again, I might be reading it wrong because instead of I'm looking at age, I might not be looking at eras. Which era do you identify with? I think would probably make you fit you in a certain archetype. Like, for instance, according to my chart, the era that I identify with, the boomers, would put me in the prophet category. And I'm like, yeah, that sort of like makes sense, rallying, that in your midlife you focus a lot on moral issues, and that in your older life you sort of like try to you try to become a counselor to the individuals that are going to go through a crisis. You know, a crisis that I still think is going to manifest itself. Just here's the thing: after a crisis, you do get another period of growth, right? This is where I'm like, okay, let's talk about the future. What happens in a world in which people do unite? We have a stronger sort of like group cohesion, and now we have sophisticated technology. We're living in an age of low group cohesion, a time of crisis, right? We haven't really looked at the future in which people are actually working together. That future is building.
We're working together. It's just very different. It's online working together.
Well, that's what's interesting about the much of the generational divides, for instance. Say Generation Y is where I fall into and you kind of fall into. Talks about a generation that is very connected because they grew up in the information age. And I wonder what a group like, say, Nomads or like Artistic that's worked towards this, you know, like a combination of strong individualism and also group cohesion works in a global environment. Because they say that during those periods there's strong nationalism, but what happens if it's now people view themselves in a global community?
But
do we have globalism?
But it works in a global environment, but you also have this kind of situation where activities shared online, projects we're doing online, share in a common denominator of that particular project, right? Like, whereas in real life, I'm more likely to have friends that have similar theories that I do, which will then therefore kind of harden those theories and make me believe that even more, which, you know, that's a proven fact. If you're conservative and you hang out with people who are conservative, everybody in that room gets more conservative.
They get more conservative. Group polarization. We did a few shows about that.
What happens when you're in a situation where everything's project-based? So, like, if I'm going online and, like, for example, I'll talk about the Project for Awesome. I want to do the Project for Awesome through YouTube. That's a bunch of people trying to raise money for charity. That's entirely project-based. It has nothing to do with any political leanings. It has nothing to do with any age groups in particular. Yes, there is an age group that is overrepresented, but it doesn't matter, right? Because online you can hide your identity in so many ways. You can be kind of whatever you want to be. So what happens when you don't have to identify with people in your immediate social network?
Well, I think you probably people will be surprised that they, you know, there's a tendency to fall within some of these stereotypes that you might be friends with someone who skips one age generation because you find more in common or you have this sort of like general, you know, similar interests or aptitudes. Who knows? I mean, all I'm saying is that there's a kind of, it's almost frightening to even contemplate the fact that that could be true, but fascinating at the same time, like we said, right? Where could we actually predict things about the future? One of the interesting elements of this of this theory is if it was true, China doesn't have the same generational rhythm that we do. They're in a current, they're not in a state of crisis, actually. They're in a golden period there because their kind of 1970s didn't happen, right? They skipped it. It was a kind of giant cultural genocide, but they skipped it. But I think actually that if the theory is true, this might be the reason why we didn't actually go through a global economic crisis when we had that economic meltdown, because China's going through a golden age, which offset that imbalance that would have been created if everyone was in the same age at the same time. See what I'm saying? You can't have the whole world in crisis. You need to have like that split. I think that split just happened, and it's a wonderful thing. I think that's actually why I'm hopeful about the future, because we went through a recession and it didn't break us. It didn't make us violent. It just made us indebted towards you know, another country that will itself go through a crisis and need money as well. It's going to be a back and forth. That's what it's going to be. That's the new safety net, in a sense. If the theory is true, but again, I don't know.
Everybody fails
right?
in their own time. That's the safety net?
Everybody has a generation of failures. But those generations, it takes a long time for those failures to happen. It's not each generation is there a failure. It's just that each generation progressively leads to either failure or success. But it's just a natural consequence of a number of things. One is that apparently these things happen when we become too coddled. We lose trust in institutions that we should have trust in. But like it's a delicate balance, right? Like I wish we could stay within that little nomad slash artistics, like a bit of all of the different characteristics, being like, couldn't we just find an eternal balance? Have
maybe
less
there's a parenting
strong...
book there, like raising your child for a better world.
Raising your child to skip one generation of cultural identity. Mm-hmm. I don't know what. So you could offset that balance. I just feel like maybe the cultural forces have become too strong, where now maybe we would fit more into those stereotypes, and that is more frightening. Maybe the key is to lose those stereotypes, to not fit into any generation,
well,
but to identify with generational
trends. I think we are moving away from that, though, in a big way. I know that personally I identify with conceptual identities more than, like, global conceptual identities, far more than I identify with any particular age group. Like, if you asked me, you know, there's that terrible question of just, like, if you didn't know how old you were, how old would you be? And what that question is really asking is, you know, what is your emotional, mental age? How old do you feel? What generation do you identify with? And I think we're coming into a situation where that's not so cut and dry. It's much more difficult for people to answer that.
I hope so, because if you look at the trend, especially when I was talking about, well, you would expect the 18 to 24s to also have the same conservative bent that the Gen Xers would have, but you don't see that, actually. And I think that offset is caused by what we were talking about before, where a lot of the other elements that might, say, lead to one group becoming more xenophobic and closed, those avenues are almost impossible now. The internet has a way of enticing you, of fucking sucking you in. And you know, I was thinking about this the other day. If a person said, well, what age were you alive in? And there's lots of very interesting ages that kind of define us as a species, ages that we should be aware of, important times in history. You've been alive during one of those times. The internet is an invention that doesn't get uninvented. It is a notion that just demands that we become more connected. And I don't know what the fuck is going to happen now. Because everything that, you know, every time I was just joking about, oh, well, let's compare ourselves to an organism like ants. The reason that we can't is just because there's no cohesion like an ant colony. You know, an ant colony has different ways that it has that cohesion. The first and most important way is genetic similarity. If there's too much genetic drift between certain ants, they're just like, war, I'm going to fucking kill you. You're my cousin and I don't like it. You got to be my brother or half-brother, or otherwise I'm going to fucking kill you. But, you know, we don't have those same kinds of motivations or edicts or anything else like that. So we can't be just summed up easily like an ant colony could. But this, what about in a world in which now this communication system really does make us move towards these trends unconsciously, these cultural forces that are even beyond our scrutiny?
Well, here's an interesting concept that has been brought to my attention recently and has made me think too much. You know, I got into one of the signature Jacob overthinking states over the last couple of days. And it's just this idea that in a bee colony, the way things are decided. So eventually, at the end of a season, a bee colony is too big, and they can't have any more bees. So what happens is that a bunch of bees...
It's abortion.
...will go hang out on a tree with their queen, and all these... So, like, half the bees go, and they go and hang out on a tree. And once they all get there, and they're hanging out on this tree, a bunch of scout bees go out. About half of them go out and survey different environments, and they take measurements, and they figure out whether or not this is a good environment.
The density of flowers to...
Yeah. So they take a bunch of measurements.
They do a bunch of math.
They fly back. They do a bunch of math and they fly back and they do a little dance. And if the location that they found was really good, they'll do a longer dance. And if the location was okay, then they'll do a little short little dance. And then people, other bees will notice their dance, and then they will go fly to that location because the dance includes the location. They'll go fly to that location and make their own decision. And they'll fly back. And if they liked it, then they'll make their little dance. And this goes on for about a week until eventually all the bees are doing the same dance and they have consensus and they make the same decision.
They make the same choice.
Scientists have been figuring out that this actually 99.9% of the time, they always pick the absolute 100% best location for the new hive.
Jesus.
Every once in a while, they pick the second best, but 99.9% of the time is a pretty fucking good ratio. Because this is a form of true democracy. And at the center of this, what we have is we have a situation where every single individual makes their own unbiased decision and then stands behind and rallies. And I think that...
We're getting closer to that state.
Yeah, what I found really interesting about that is that I believe, or I'd like to believe, although this is really hard to imagine, that we're getting closer to a situation where we can do that. You know, we can see Mitt Romney standing up there doing his little bee dance, and I can go look up his information and figure out whether
that's
or not...
That's a damn live dance. His pants must be on fire.
Yeah, it's like that bees... And that's the problem we have, right? The problem we have is that we're not bees, and we're motivated by personal gain, and we're motivated by religion, and we're motivated by what our spouse thinks and trying to make other people like us.
We're actually motivated by certain things that work against our interests, which is the problem. It's kind of like you send the bee out there and the bee makes a lot of really bad decisions. And that's all of us. We make really bad decisions. Like, let me give you an example. Let's look at religion as a perfect example of a bad decision. Because here you have, I mean, I'm reading the Bible, and I'm at the part where Solomon's sacrificing, I think the number's 40,000 sheep or cattle, some ridiculously high number. Even if it wasn't that high, the message is many animals were slaughtered. And think about that. That's a measure of wealth. That would be like saying every year you take a few billion dollars and you burn it for no fucking reason. And you think about the kind of waste that that causes. But there's an interesting element to it that I thought to myself, maybe this is the real purpose of religion in a sense, is that perhaps that waste was its own form of population reduction management without knowing. We killed a whole bunch of animals not knowing that we kept our population lower because we just didn't suddenly prosper, which meant that there were severe famines, fewer people died. This could be an explanation, because I can't understand how so much waste could continue for so long and lead to our success as a species. It's a lot of waste. It's so surprisingly wasteful, in fact, that I'm like, how has this been allowed to survive as long as it have? Just as a cultural...
Well, religion, I don't know. I don't know if it's always been that wasteful. Because think about it. There's also votive statues. Remember when we were at the Asian supply store a few weeks ago? And we saw those boxes? They have these boxes that you can buy them for
$3. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're these cardboard boxes. And inside they have little cardboard cutout versions of, like, fancy watches and things so that you can burn them to the gods.
You can fool the gods.
So it is quote unquote wasteful. But how wasteful is it really?
Here's the thing. Let's go back to that whole you gather up $1 billion and you burn it. You don't think Ocean's 11 would have sort of like switched that money right at the end and you're just burning fucking paper?
Not just that, but how many times, like in the Bible, they talk about it too. I mean, you should have run across this right now where they rarely burn whole animals. A lot of the time they're burning the shit you can't eat. You know, or like they'll sacrifice an animal, but they'll keep the meat. Like, it's not nearly as wasteful as you think it is. Every once in a while, it is.
You can only keep the meat once the whole fat is gone, which means that it's burnt as shit and not edible. You're not doing a lot of eating. In fact, every time that they get their ass kicked, it's because people have been eating the meat part of it. You are supposed to give it all. That's the whole force.
You don't.
Well, of course they don't.
You don't. You make different decisions and times.
Do you know what
meat.
That is? That you set someone up to fail when you tell them, I am your God, and you're going to have to sacrifice all of your wealth and get to eat none of it. Yeah, someone's going to cheat. So maybe that's the only reason it survived.
But here's the other
thing. Because we're cheaters.
Happiness scientists have done a lot of research to suggest that we feel more satisfied and satiated after periods of depravity from things. Right? So, for example, like every once in a while, I don't drink coffee for like 2 weeks. Because then when I have a coffee, it's the best coffee I've ever freaking had.
Do you know what happens when you actually do that? You don't suffer through this problem where you stop appreciating what you have. Blame the institutions.
Yeah, the hedonic treadmill.
Blame the institutions that are providing you these services and be like, oh, I want my cake and eat it too. again, like, this is why I really, honestly, that's my ageism. Just to go back there for 5 seconds of the 65 and older, is because they're sabotaging the future of the youth in order for their comfort, and they're already materially wealthy. All right. What they don't understand is that one of the things about Generation Y and even younger, and this is happening in Europe more, is the fact that all of these people are very unemployed. And this is what causes a crisis, is you have a number of very, very unemployed youths who grow dissatisfied.
Very unemployed as opposed to moderately unemployed?
Well, yeah, moderately unemployed is in the longer you are unemployed, the less likely you are to have a job. I hopefully I'll be putting that in the notes, but I may forget. But this is an important element to consider, too, because there's lots of individuals that are fairly young who have been unemployed for a long time. Like, half of Spain's youth is unemployed. And the reason, all the money that was supposed to go to creating jobs and real estate, that was really sucked up by older people that already had security and you know, they didn't need to take risks. They're doing okay, and they also want free health, and they want you to pay for it. But then when you say, I don't want to be an economic slave in order to get the education that's even required for me to have that job, you don't have that option anymore. You either have to jump on the fucking economic slave bandwagon so that this extremely strong voting group who works against your fucking interests can have a slightly more comfortable retirement. That's why I'm angry. That's where my ageism comes from. And I know that it's not the people who listen to my show, but I'm mad at your generation because I can give it a name. It has a name. And some of you are part of that generation. You're like, worst generation ever. That's what it is. Gen Xers, I'm looking at you, you know? And I say this being like, I think that's my dad. So I hate you, Dad. I think that's what it boils down to. I hate you, Dad. That's the general trend of all civilization. I hate you, Dad.
I wonder what my
but I love Grandpa. I love Grandpa. He's so nice, and he never says no. That's why you love your grandparents. Something as simple as that. Yeah. I've just identified the human trend of
I like
ideological.
The people who are always nice and never say no.
Yeah, and then you'll buy into their ideology that's different from their children because they disagreed, all because Grandpa played nice. You ruined the world. That's what you did. And now I'm going to be the crisis generation dude. That sucks.
Yeah, it's an interesting position to be in a generation that's so full of hope and also so terrifying. I mean,
just
I wonder...
Just terrified. The most terrified generation ever.
Terrified and hopeful. Like, that's how it feels. I mean, I'm constantly reading things about, like, we're curing disease and technology's going to save us and everything's great.
And these exciting technological
so
breakthroughs.
Exciting
because it's sort of like we introduce a technology that people can have. Hey, 3D printers.
Genome sequencing. Home genome sequencing kits. Like, this shit
home AIDS
is so
tests.
Cool. Yeah.
The fucking future is now,
but then
bitches.
At the same time, it's like, oh, but also everything's bad. You know, I mean, it's hard not to feel very divided and like you need to make extreme decisions in a time like this, which is what we need to be cautious of. I think we should really look at the whole B mentality and have a conversation with the next generation to come. I mean, it's too late for us. Our biases are ingrained. It's not going to get any better. But we can help the generation to come and try and train them and be like, look, skepticism is more important than you can possibly understand. It is a strategy that has been proven to be unbelievably reliable. And skepticism should
and
be
life-saving.
First.
Life-saving.
Yeah, because you know what? You're a little bee. You're going to do your little bee dance. But unless you have skepticism to back you up, and when you go see scout another location and it's genuinely better, and you can actually change your idea and do your little dance for that team, we're not going to have a world that's going
to
work.
So what we need you to do is do a little dance and make a little love.
And okay? Be skeptical.
Please get skeptical tonight. Get skeptical tonight.
I want to make a graphic for this so bad. Oh, goodness. What did I say?
It's the lesson of the show. And you know, I do feel bad. I'm going to say, I'm sorry, Gen Xers. I'm sorry, Dad, for blaming you for everything. Because obviously, you are a product of those generational tides that, you know, maybe you couldn't fight against. Here's what I'm looking forward to. If we really are in a crisis right now, that means that by the time that there is a real environmental crisis, we'll be in a golden age. That is the hope for the future. That if we do come to that crisis, we will be able to come together. And we will have very good reasons to get together. And we'll have the technology, the techniques, the understanding to do it. But unfortunately, until the Gen Xers and the Silent Generation croak and die, we can't have that future. And I'm sorry, that's.
But
I'm backed up with some numbers. I hate to say it, folks. When I did my research, I'm like, I'm even more ageist. Oh my God, I hate you all. I hate you all.
I think I'm on the side of rather than being like, all those people should die. I'm more like, I think that we need to be as more supportive of parents going through raising children right now than we've ever been before, because we
give them tools.
Give them tools.
Make them make their kids brilliant, please.
Be supportive, yeah.
We can make super geniuses. We need a whole bunch of them right now.
Parenting is incredibly difficult, and it's only going to get more difficult. And parents aren't stupid. They totally realize that they're in a situation where it's like, this generation is super fucking important. Like, mass extinction important. That's a lot of stress. And you know what? As I, you know, we used to work with kids, I deal with a lot of parents. Parents are crazy because of this. It makes you nuts because there's a lot at stake. And you know, you see this whole world and this little creature that you've been, you know, you have to raise and you have to take care of. And I think we should be standing up and being like, all right, let's do what we can to cultivate that generation and make a good thing.
It's interesting that one of the archetypes, which is the hero archetype, which is technically where I fall into, my generation. Right?
I thought you were the prophet.
That's what I identify with.
Ah.
But what my generation or age group falls into is the hero generation.
What's my age group? Are we in the same age group?
No, not technically. I'm gross.
You sick old man.
I'm a gross old man. I went one generation sort of down. You will probably be the artistic generation, the one that seeks consensus, but
I do.
And but you know,
I just want us all to get
along. You'll still have a distrust of institutions, which is what my hero generation wants to build so bad. And you're going to benefit from it and then rally against it, you little bitch. That's what you're going to do. You're going to be ungrateful for the shit I'm going to build. Fuck you. We're broken up.
What just happened?
No, we need you, actually. No, the artistic one. You build consensus. No, it's good. It's good. You lead to you lead to a golden age. No, I love you again. I love you again. I just don't. I hate the other generation, the nomads, damn gypsies. They break the world, the damn nomads. That's it. I've identified it. The problem in the nomads. If we have kids, they'll destroy the world.
No, then we just have to not procreate.
That's what's going to happen.
All right, we figured it out.
Shit.
Live on the show, we can't have babies.
If generational theory is correct.
Which I'm still super skeptical. Like, anytime I look at something like this that is horribly oversimplified into archetypes.
Oh, no, you're going to say that thing that's an oxymoron?
I'm very skeptical of any kind of archetyping, because I think they want to identify. Yeah. We want to identify with archetypes. And when you make generalized statements like this, it's really easy for you to push any generation into these boxes. They're general enough that, you know, you really could. It's basically kind of astrology, sort of.
See, there was that element of it that I felt.
We're going to wrap up the show because I feel like today on the show, if you're older than 55, it made you feel like a big piece of shit show. Yeah, or maybe at least your generation feel like a big piece of shit. But at least we got to understand a little bit more about generational theory, and you know, maybe spot some of the flaws. Like Carissa said, we can begin right at the issue of saying, well, this all sounds a bit like astrology here. You're making some pretty broad statements, and maybe it could hold true also in the world of yesterday, but is that true for the world of today too? When so much of the kind of world conflicts that we've seen in the past have been a result of too little communication. You know, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Too little communication could have been fucking deadly. Oh, let me talk to you through a typewriter across the sea. No. And,
beep, beep,
yeah.
beep, beep, beep,
and what do you do in a world in which, say, if there is a regrowth in nationalism, but people don't have these national identities now, where they want something else. What happens in that world where all of a sudden people are like, let's work together for real, like from across the globe and shit? A possibility that may have seemed impossible for just a few generations ago, but things happen fast. And that's maybe what's so striking about generational theory to me, is this idea that in just a short period of time, things can really change a lot. And that, maybe that's why I'm a bit more convinced by it, just because I'm like, damn, I see change. I see radical change all the time. And within such short periods of time, it's like a balancing act, pendulum swing. And because of the way that it swings, different shit happens. But, you know, I think that right now what we're experiencing is that while we should have had a movement more towards, say, the left, the population bubble of the baby boomers, post-baby boomers, and the low population dynamic we have now because just people are like, fuck kids, means that one group has a disproportionate amount of control and power. And that's what you're experiencing now. That's why in the United States, you're like, your Congress is impotent. You can't pass any laws that are even mildly progressive, despite the fact that a majority of your population would respond that they have progressive values. So it's just because, like I said, this is an explanation. So whether or not it's true is up to you. You can look at the notes. They're lengthy and confusing as this podcast was, unfortunately.
This podcast was really confusing.
There's a lot of data and a lot of, like, there is no clear way for me to enunciate all of these different factors because that would have required 2 weeks of work.
Okay, but here's a good question, I think, to sum it up, is that do you think that in this modern society, it's the generation you're born into that is still the most influential, or is it the generation you identify with? Do you think it's still totally divided against age lines in this modern world?
I think it is, only because while we do have more, you know, better tools for communication, for instance, and even identifying and education, there are still some of those tools are still kind of barriers. Like, for instance, you're going to disproportionately have the opinions and attitudes in this new communication medium of the people who actually know how to navigate it. And the people who know how to navigate it are not this one generation of people that we were talking about before. They're suddenly going to be cut right out of the conversation. That's what's going to happen. Just because they can't adapt to this new world that's now the primary method of communication. And phone systems, company communications, virtual environments, and the future. Who knows what the fuck the future is in terms of just its communication potential, but you think that grandpa and grandma are going to be still on there lending their voices to the new global network? Or are they just going to be put on the ice floe? Be like, see you later. Despite the fact that also these people who are not part of the conversation are the voting majority. And this is why there's this huge disparity between what you read and see and the real actual physical consequence of that. You live in a bubble. Delusion called the internet, which is dominated by people who do not dominate the polls.
So in this political campaign, you keep hearing over and over again that the internet hates Mitt Romney, and it always makes me giggle because it really does bring attention to the fact that, you know, when I think about it, I think of the internet as this very inclusive environment where all of the people participate and we hear all of the voices and everybody talks. But really, it's just a community of like 17-year-olds and, you know,
well,
basically 12-year-olds to 35-year-olds, mostly, who grew up in a generation where you had access to the internet, so it feels like second nature. It doesn't feel, scary and inaccessible. And
you navigate it as effortlessly as an eel doesn't water.
Yeah, and it makes me really remind myself that I am super cut off from people who are not web-savvy. My whole universe revolves around web-savvy people.
And you don't know the power and influence that they have because you are only...
I only watch their dances.
You only watch their dances from a medium that is notoriously politically leaning towards what you already believe. It's just blindness. That's all it is. It doesn't mean necessarily that your opinions are wrong. It just means that you can't see the opinions or the power of others. That is invisible to you, but you don't realize that they're actually the ones who actually hold the power. That's why, you know, like in the States, you can hate Mitt Romney, but he still has a fucking puncher's chance in what should be a knockout. It should be a fucking knockout, but it isn't.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to see that the way things are actually skewed.
But like I said before, there's a good the generational theory actually does provide the most plausible explanation as to why those numbers are what they are.
Well, I am rightly skeptical.
You should be. I'm skeptical as well. But, you know, I come up on the show and I got to sell this shit and I got to pretend that I believe in everything that it says. Although it has confirmed my hatred for the old elderly. Sorry, guys.
It worries me.
Sorry.
No,
I think for Christmas we should
go volunteer somewhere where there are old people. Because, the best thing you can do to fight racism
is to help old poor people. I don't hate old poor people. I hate old middle to affluent people. I hate them so much. They took from the system. They keep taking from the system and they want no one else to. And then they want to dismantle it, those old fuck faces. They're not my listening audience, though. Those are the ones that are old and
poor.
They're
not now.
And, well, no, probably not. But I don't need them. They don't listen to podcasts. They listen to radio, and they watch TV, mediums that I don't dominate in. So you know what? I cater towards that same group that has that blindness where they think, hey, the internet said something, so it's going to be true. I should slap you in the face. Slap you, because you just don't see the delusion that you've created. Yes, the internet leans one way, and that's not the whole world.
It's just interesting to think that like the internet can be summed up as a community that has an overarching opinion. Just whenever people say it creates a really strong awareness for me of what the internet really is.
But see, this is why I say in the future is hopeful, because the internet is that progressive powerhouse that is undeniable. Like, if you want to know how you make all of this happen faster, give internet to everyone right now. Just give them internet, and no one's going to stop you, even though everybody knows that it leans one way. That's why those rabbis, remember a couple of shows ago, we did a thing about rabbis holding a conference to see whether or not the internet was bad or good, and they couldn't stay away from it themselves. They're like, oh, it's so useful for everything. Yeah, it's the greatest invention we've ever done, we've ever made. Literally, yeah. It's better than the wheel. Way better than wheel, you'll
it's
see.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty fucking amazing that any question you have in the world is just instantly answered.
Seconds away.
Yeah.
Ridiculous seconds away. I remember going at home with questions, always questions, and now I grow up in a world in which my questions can be answered if I have enough fucking chutzpah to figure that shit out and really research it. And then sometimes they end up being good shows or totally confused shows. I guess it all depends.
Let us know in the comments whether this was a confusing show or not.
Krista thinks that way. I just think that she's just, confused. She has a beer in her hand. She might be drunk. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm only...
You haven't eaten anything.
Right.
We started the show without any food. You woke up. You were drowsy. I threw a whole bunch of this shit at you. You don't think you're slightly confused? And you were sick. I think everybody else gets it. They may have been confused when I flubbed up the whole archetype thing, but that's the one part of the theory that I disagree with fundamentally. I think the archetype thing is ridiculous and overcomplicates what I think is still fundamentally has something of value to say. And you know what? There is a way to track it. If I'm correct, you could just look at the numbers, just the age groups. If you could find the numbers, like, it's so hard to find, and if you're better at math than me, please.
Okay, so this last week, I want to totally change this topic for a couple seconds. Is that cool?
No, but
you,
do it.
You can edit it out if you want.
No.
So over the last week, I've noticed, Jake, that you have been sending me shit all the time, and you keep being like, oh, you should see this thing, and you should look at this thing. And I think it would be great for your audience. I wish that they had the benefit that I have, because whenever you send me something out, it's always awesome.
should I make JacobForte.com like just a kind of Tumblr thing where I just share
you should fucking totally have a Tumblr, because I would follow the crap out of that. But I also think, like, I think you should give, I don't know if you can come up with it off the top of your head, but I would love to hear you give your audience right now, like, the three things that you saw this week that you would love to share with them. Because the shit you find is super fucking cool.
I don't even really share most of the stuff, because I'm
well,
always
a lot
worried
of it's
about
not
clogging up your shit.
Related too.
I know. It's just the runoff of research that I do. Just the runoff, because, my life is research. Honestly, it is. We watch a movie. What is the first thing I do before we watch the movie?
Oh, you're constantly looking up all this stuff on the internet.
All
Speaking
of
movies, we saw Looper.
Looper, yeah.
And it was excellent. Go see
it
Looper.
It was awesome. It was, to go on a tangent for all of those of you who care and who by now are still listening, mysteriously enough. Oh, yeah, you like that I sent you? Yeah. I sent Carissa these awesome pumpkin carving. They'll be in the notes for those of you who are still with us. Go check it out. It's just fucking awesome. There's this artist who carves pumpkins the way that all pumpkins should be carved.
They are...
In perpetuity.
Incredibly nerdy.
They're so cool.
One of them
is Predator, and he looks so much like Predator.
I like the one that's, like, leaning his cheek against the other pumpkin. I think...
Oh, my God. I like the one where it's, like, this guy who's got his head severed, and he's hanging, like the Halloween one. Because it's just... I mean, that's badass Halloween.
They're just amazing.
Sculpture. Just
anyway,
amazing.
I think that I'm going to challenge you to put together some kind of thing so your fans can see this. Because, I mean, I used to be a fangirl, we talk about stuff on the show that's more than just atheism.
It's true.
There's other interests. And you spend, I can't tell you guys, he spends like 8.5 hours a day researching and then 4 hours playing video games. That's his every day. That's every day.
Well, the video games really help to kind of calm down the mind.
That's
after
a while. Every day. He's just on the computer, and then I'll be working, or I'll go somewhere, and I'll come home, and he'll be on the gaming console. That's his life. It's just switching between screens.
It's so true.
And in that process, he finds tons of cool stuff, and I love that I'm privy to those things. But it, you know, I would like if everybody could be privy to those things. Someplace
yeah,
you can share
true.
Them that isn't necessarily the Good Atheist fan page.
You know, here's the challenge: knowing how many comments are normally left on the typical comment thing, because you know, obviously, I scrutinize my own comments. If I get 6 comments from people on this podcast that say, "Jacob, we want you to set up something so we can follow other things that you just find in your relentless quest for information."
These things are really good. These things are really
So you can let me know
fun.
If that's important, and then I'll just create... Because the truth is, I've been sitting on my jacobfortan.com address for a little while, mostly because I don't want to make a personal site just yet because I don't feel the accomplishments are that great. We're working towards that. Yeah, yeah. No, trust me, by the time I'm done with the book and the DVD, then I'll feel nice.
You just made me feel really self-conscious about my personal side. I'm like, do I have enough accomplishments?
Don't judge yourself based on my judgment thing. I'm an egomaniac. I compare myself to, you know, people that are incomparable. But, you know, that's a different standard.
I think Tumblr is the best option. Ryan and I are both on Tumblr.
I think Tumblr is where I'd be leaning towards. So if you guys... I don't know how many Tumblr fans there are.
Well, you can follow it even if you're not on Tumblr.
Well, the tricky thing is you got to understand. I mean, I've got my toe dipped in so many little social networks thing. I'm so tired of everything. Like some other people have been telling me, get on Google Plus. The amount of time I spend on other things, I don't know if I want to. And one more little social thing like Pinterest or Tumblr or something. I don't know. I want to punch the internet in
the
face.
Well, here's the thing. I think that you should pick 5. Big 5. I find 5 is easy to pay attention to. If you have 5 online things that you actually service and the rest of them kind of like...
So what are your 5? You
my
got 5, Facebook?
Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Tumblr, and Daily Booth are my 5 that I give a crap about. And then I have other ones. I have Google Plus and stuff like that, but I just don't... I don't try at them because they're too... They're just off my radar. I think you should, you know, participate in lots of stuff, but pick the 5 ones that are best service what you do. I like Daily Booth, even though I get hit on a lot on Daily Booth. I still like it. It's cool.
Oh, I wouldn't do that shit. But
I want to get it more into like doing daily. Once I get the cool new camera, I want to do photos and stuff.
I just worry that you do something like that, and you pretty much you kind of you water down everything else you can do. Like for instance, I try to make the Facebook page alive enough and the Twitter, which is linked, conversationally enough that you can follow me in different ways. And you know, even with Google Reader, there are people who... You know, there are people who don't listen to this podcast at all. They just read what I write.
Okay,
they don't even like the podcast. What is wrong with those people? And yet I still service them. I feel like I'm divided into like 10,000 different little pieces. I don't know what to do.
Okay, but here's the thing. I would totally understand if you were just a normal person. I think if you're just a normal person and you just interact with the internet for pleasure, then just find the thing you like. Maybe you're into YouTube videos. Maybe you're only into looking at stuff on Facebook. Maybe you're a big Tumblr person. Pick one. You know, I totally get that. But the thing is, that's your job. And you're right. Lots of fans only interact with things through Google Reader. Lots of fans only interact with certain things.
Because they're normal people. Why are you so convincing?
Sorry.
Don't come on my show anymore.
Sorry.
You're making me more work.
I'm sorry.
So give me more work.
Tumblr is really easy.
All it's going to take is 6 comments.
Six comments.
And
I'll comment, does that count? Would my comment count?
No, but it would count if you had convinced someone that you knew to do it. And Tammy doesn't count.
Damn it. I was totally thinking Tammy.
She's already going to do it. Though. Yeah, I wouldn't even try you know, to use her.
Tumblr's super easy to use.
I know it's super easy to use, but
I think a lot of people who listen to the show, because here's the thing, is that how long have you been doing the show now? Almost 4 years.
Almost 7 years.
What?
Yeah. No, sorry, almost 6 years.
Wow, that's a fucking long time. I think
started in 2007.
I think there's a lot of people who listen to the show who listen because they enjoy you. And atheism is just a bonus. So I think it'd be cool if people could see your other interests and the stuff you come across. In an 8-hour day, you come across a lot of really interesting stuff. And I think, you know, putting them somewhere as a collection of links and videos and pictures would be nice.
Well, you know what? I have introduced an almost pseudo-democracy on the site itself. In fact, there is a poll on the site currently for the top five interviews. And, you know, if you look at the list of people that are in the finalists, you're like, shit, these are some impressive names. And now they're having a full-out war, who's going to win, and I like it that way. But you know what? You've got your own opinions, and you guys outnumber their fan base. So go on. Well, at least the fan base that they can convince to vote on my site. There's thousands of people listening to this show, okay? They could be... If I had the power to motivate these motherfuckers, which I don't, but if I did, in this impossible world, we could do something amazing. But I have no power over these assholes.
That's a nice way to put it.
Oh, and by the way, do you guys want to be a hardcore member? Because from now on, if you want to be able to listen to the long and huge backlog of shows that we have, which is, you know, over 240 shows currently in the backlog, then you have to be a hardcore member. And those of you that are sort of like, well, hardcores might be a little bit too much. The Essentials DVD is going to be out very, very soon. The pre-sales are going to be, I think, in 2 weeks when I'm finished the audio portion of it. Because, you know, the thing that takes the longest is doing the stupid cover.
I think we should do, once your Essentials comes out, I think a lot of people probably want the Essentials. But I think we should also do something for, like, people who are, like, they listen, but they have a partner or a friend who's really into The Good Atheist, like Christmas packages. When I remember Mr. Deity did that, and yeah. I was going to buy it
Christmas
for my dad,
packages,
where
like
it was
that.
Basically like you got a CD and then you got a page of the script signed by the whole cast and like a bunch of other stuff. It was cool.
A Christmas special. I kind of like that idea. Well, you know, I'm sure right when my head has kind of been focused on the Essentials currently, just because I really want to get that out of the way so I can focus on other things. But, you know, like anything I do, I always over-obsess about it, want to make it just all kinds of perfect, and probably take way too much time to actually release that motherfucker. But it will be released. It will be released, and maybe we can include some kind of cool thing where maybe a little bit more and you have membership so you can buy a DVD for yourself, having probably already listened to the shows and be like, hey, a friend, here's a, you know, I bought you a 3-month membership for this thing and it's awesome and enjoy it. Or who knows what. There's all kinds of possibilities.
Comment. Tell Jake he needs, it doesn't have to be a Tumblr. It could just be like something on jacobfortune.com where he can share all the cool links. He shares them with me kind of and it's worth it. Trust me. Comment.
Well, you heard it from Carissa and she's the boss. So
I'm going to start a bunch of fake accounts and just comment.
Don't you dare. If I find out that there are fake accounts that you did, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Don't peer pressure me into doing it. I want my fans to peer pressure me.
Damn it, why did I have to say it out loud? It just came to me and then I said it out loud. I need to have some kind of inner monologue.
Stupid liquor. That's what.
Stupid beer.
Oh, it's like a truth serum.
Stupid Yang Jin beer.
We're giving our money to China.
I love this beer so much.
Yeah, you like Chinese beer.
It's so freaking good.
Okay, well, before we leave, I'd like to thank everybody who's been a contributing member who is a hardcore. You guys have supported us and continue to support us. Remember, even though the book did very well, we still need you to continue to support. Living is expensive, so without your donations and memberships, we're pretty much in the shitter. So we need you to continue to be members and to support The Good Atheist, because you know what? The future is always bright. I do want to paint that bright future, but I want to shake you and slap you in the face a little bit and say that you need to be part of that future. And some of that means that I'm going to take your wallet, take some money out of it, and you're going to thank me. Well, maybe not thank you, but yeah, I'm just going to take it out of your wallet.
Yeah, I don't tend to thank you when you take money out of my wallet.
Yeah? That's because you're mean. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Chris Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.